Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
You know, many years ago, there was this best-selling book called Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, and like Chicken Soup of the Soul, it kind of had all these, you know, riffs on this Don't Sweat the Small Stuff. And in one of my articles where I write 10 tips for a happy marriage, number one of my tip for a happy marriage is do sweat the small stuff. Because a lot of times, if somebody's getting upset about something, it's not small. Although it might be the shoes on the floor or the towels in the bathroom or, you know, the fact that you don't call when you're late. These things may seem small, but to the person who's experiencing them, they're not small at all. And because in a lot of marriages, couples do not pay attention to those things that really hurt their partners, most marriages die the death of what I call, you know, 10,000 cuts. They die from, it's often unintentional neglect. And, you know, in this day and age, everything else seems to be so much more important than the marriage until the day that one person says, hey, I want out. And it could be a case of that they've met someone else, or maybe they've just reached their limit of not being a priority. But anyway, by that time, it's almost always too late. And the hard truth is that the end of most marriages is completely avoidable. And so I've always wanted to know what it is that keeps couples from taking better care of their marriages. What is it that they're ignoring, and what's the real truth about why their actions don't support their often stated words about loving each other and about the marriage being important? So my guest today, Matthew Frey, is a writer on marriage, relationships, and divorce at the Good Men Project, and his wonderfully funny blog, Must Be This Tall to Ride. He's here to help answer these questions. So Matt, thanks so much for joining me.
Hi, Leslie. Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
So, you know, I read a couple of your posts, and then, of course, that sent me to your blog. And you wrote one for the Good Men Project called This is the Way Your Marriage Ends, Not with a Bang. And in this article, you say that good people ruin marriage not intentionally, because they're bad at it. So what do you mean by that?
It's funny. Well, I thought you really summed it up really well in the intro there, and I don't want to misquote you, but I believe you said most marriages end, and you call it death by, did you say?
10,000 cuts.
10 pricks, or 10,000 cuts, thank you. And the phrase I've always used is sort of like death by a million pinpricks. It's these indiscernible little moments that just pile up into like a gushing wound one day. Gone neglected for so long, and you just didn't notice because it's like it didn't hurt bad enough, or at least for one of the parties, which in my estimation is usually the oblivious husband. And I say that because,
well,
I feel like I was one of them, and it's not always true.
Well, and I'd like to, I'd really like to talk about that, but I'm also not going to let my gender off the hook here, because I think a lot of what it is that we communicate differently. And one of the things that my colleague Michelle Wiener Davis talks about is women tend to talk things to death. And so I think that a lot of their complaints kind of get lost. Now, that's not always, but I think sometimes women just aren't as direct as they need to be with their guys. But maybe your story is a little bit different.
I don't know how to really say it except that I agree with what you said when this – I find this to be controversial, at least with the people that reply to me. When I get a little too focused on, you know, Dr. Gray's general idea that men are from Mars, women are from Venus from a communication standpoint and our differing emotional and chemical makeups, that wasn't a concept I understood when I was married. It was something I learned – right at the tail end of it when I was doing that, and I'm sure you've seen it a million times. You know, the guy realizes it's scary, like right at the end. He didn't know. He's oblivious for years. And then he realizes, whoa, she's serious, and then he dives into action. And then he's like, tries to be super husband, like, right at the end in order to save it, and it tends to crash and burn anyway, despite his best efforts. I'm very blessed that I stayed on the journey regardless. Like, even though it crashed and burned predictably at the end, despite my best efforts to save it, I still wanted to continue the education part of it. So I started reading all these books, and the thing that made sense to me, and I have no way of knowing how true it is because I'm, you know, not a biologist or I'm no expert on gender studies or anything like that, but the idea that women tend to communicate and then experience life and emotion a certain way, and then men tend to communicate and experience life and emotion this different way, that was something that I really identified with in my marriage, and it seems like lots and lots of other couples do too. And then you run into
Absolutely.
That occasional couple where that doesn't apply to them, where they live somewhat outside that stereotype or generality, and sometimes people get a little bit offended by the gender stereotyping pigeonholes. And I haven't quite figured out what to do with that yet, so that's why I just try to say, this is what worked for me. And I understand that it's not one size fits all for everyone else. But I think that concept is extremely important, particularly for men to understand, and I think that was the key idea that put me on the path to where I am now, where I really feel like I understand generally why why the common relationship problems and how it just sort of gradually breaks and then ends in that magical 5 to 10 year range, and nobody sees it coming. It's terrifying, really.
Well, and you know, my goal is to help them to see it coming by talking to people like you. But in the article too, you also say that there's this kind of this idea, and I hear it all the time, and every time I hear this, especially, it generally is in relation to, I actually started my career in doing domestic violence work, and, you know, I would get these people say, well, at least he doesn't hit me, and I'm like going, oh my gosh, that's your standard? But you talk about, it's not necessarily being a bad person. It isn't, you know, they think that, well, I'm not cheating, I'm not abusive, so isn't that good enough? And you kind of talk about that a little bit in your article, and so could you expand on what you wrote?
I think it's very common for a man, and again, I'm sorry that I'm being so sort of specific, I'm just trying to apply it to my life and the way I tend to write about it. I think it's common for a man, a husband, to have a very provider-focused take on his role in a marriage and family. And I think he thinks that being reliable and going to work every day and making money to pay bills for the house, and the fact that he's not abandoning his family, well, you know, there's other men out there that will have children and abandon them, or that will, you know, not be there physically present for his family or his or just his wife if they don't have kids. And this husband's thinking, I'm physically present. I'm home at night. I'm not out drinking with my friends. I'm not, you know, taking business trips or elaborate golf weekends with the guys. I'm here, and I don't do drugs, and I don't drink too much, and I don't gamble our money away. Just all these classic things that you hear about, these classic, what I call the cardinal sins of marriage, you know, the affairs and the abuse and the neglect and all that mm-hmm. stuff, these sort of big red flag things that everybody universally agrees divorce is cool if those things happen. It's like, yeah, divorce, because you shouldn't live like that.
But most divorces don't happen because of those big things. And
I really think that's
the point, is that it doesn't, your marriage doesn't end with a bang. It's all the little things that add up. But in reality, and I, for some weird reason, I'm not quite sure why, maybe it's all my training, I actually can see both sides of this that shouldn't, and I'm not saying it's necessarily enough, but shouldn't guys be given credit for that? For being the, you know, that they're home, they're taking care of their family, and I think some of the question has to do with the definition of what being present means.
I couldn't agree more. Most men don't quite understand what being active in his marriage means. He thinks being at the house at the same time sometimes and saying the words "I love you" and hopefully even meaning them, that means he's active in his marriage. And I've grown to believe that that's not what actively participating in a marriage is about. But yeah, I mean, to your question, and you know, we may touch on this again before this is over, but the concept of gratitude is, I think, really critical to every single facet of our lives. I mean, extremely important. And definitely in a marriage, we spend so much time, I don't know that we spend a lot of time picking each other apart. I don't want to be so cynical about it. But we tend to do a lot more criticizing, I think, than we do praising. I'm not asking.
That is definitely true. That is absolutely, completely true, because we are, and I'm not quite sure why this is, although there are some statistics out there, and in my field we talk about them all the time, that negatives are really powerful. The things that we don't like are so powerful that for every single one of those, you need 3 to 5 positive things to balance that out, depending on how bad the negative one is. And so I think this is why I wanted to talk about, you know, don't sweat the small stuff. It's like if I get upset because my husband, actually I shouldn't say this, my husband actually would get upset with me because I used to leave my shoes, I would just take my shoes off and leave them wherever they were, and he would ask me repeatedly to pick them up, and I would go, yeah, yeah, yeah. And in his particular case, he didn't get upset about it. But he could have. And if he'd gotten upset about it, it wouldn't have been strictly because he was tripping over my shoes, which would be annoying enough. But mostly it was because he wouldn't have felt heard. That something that bothered him was not being taken seriously, I guess. And I think that's kind of your article that you wrote.
Yeah.
About, you know, did she really leave because of the dirty dishes in the sink?
Well, yes, that you just gave the reverse example, and I agree. And when we talk about being heard, I think this is one of the dangerous mindsets that some men have, and that I had too. And this was from a lack of understanding what the word empathy means and what the verb to empathize really entails. I thought because I loved my wife and because I absolutely wanted to stay married, and I did take it seriously, it wasn't something, I mean, I certainly took it for granted in my behavior from time to time, as humans are wont to do in several areas of life, but I never literally, philosophically took my marriage for granted. Marriage and my family was extremely important to me. That said, there'd be just all these little things that would happen, and my wife would get upset about them, as almost every couple goes through. But instead of asking, I think, the right questions and trying to truly listen, understand, and practice empathy, I thought my wife owed me the courtesy of not being so negative about something I perceive to be minor, like, let's just say, the dish by the sink example. I'm like, that's not important.
Mm-hmm.
It's not worth fighting for in our marriage. Our marriage is so much bigger than something silly like a dish by the sink. You owe me the respect of not causing a fight over something like this. You owe me, I think, not being super angry about the dish while at the same time completely ignoring any positive I bring to your life,
right?
To
all the positive things. Well,
yeah.
And this is the ongoing conversation about, and I, you know, I tell people that the biggest challenge to being married is to recognize that the two of you are now, always have been, and always will be two different people. Now figure it out. And it's the figuring it out that is a problem, because, you know, my son said this to me. My son, he just turned 23, and a few years back we were having some conversation, and I still can't believe I gave birth to a physicist, but anyway, because physics and I hate each other. But he actually said to me one day, he goes, Mom, he goes, I don't understand people who don't think like I do. And I said to him, I said, is that an observation or a judgment? And he goes, no, it's just an observation. And I went, okay, whew. You know, but it was like realizing that his brain worked differently, and it certainly works differently from mine. You know, so it's kind of like, why does that come as such a surprise to people?
It's It's an excellent question, and I wish I knew it, and I think that if everybody was more easily capable of sort of stepping outside themselves and just everything they think and feel and perceive and all their life experiences and understand that it's unique to them based on, you know, a trillion things that happened from the day they were born to today, and that any other person who didn't live that exact life is going to have a different set of experiences and emotions and thoughts and philosophies. And, you know, you match any of these two people up and ask them to share resources and get along every day. Sooner or later, that's not always going to happen, I don't think. I don't think there's any perfect marriages.
Well, no, I don't think there's a perfect anything. But we're willing to give our kids the benefit of the doubt or allow our kids to be different from us up to a point, because I know there are some parents that don't. We're willing to let our friends be a little bit different from us, so why don't we give our spouses that same leeway?
No, that's a perfectly fair question, and I certainly don't have the answer to it. These are still questions I'm trying to ask and trying to figure out, and God willing, maybe people will figure this out, because I love that we're having this conversation, and I want everyone to be having this conversation, because I don't think enough people talk about marriage and relationships. People just have them and complain about them once in a while.
Right, and they bitch to their friends or they bitch to each other, but they don't actually really work on finding a solution. This is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on webtalkradio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and I'm having a truly honest conversation about the avoidable causes of divorce with writer Matthew Frey. And to be honest, if you or your partner is less than thrilled with your marriage, don't wait another moment to get it back on track. Sit down, send me an email, or give me a call, and take advantage of my free, no obligation, absolutely private conversation about what you can do to make your marriage better. You can reach me at Leslie, L-E-S-L-I, at foundationscoachingnc.com. That's F-O-U-N-D-A-T-I-O-N-S, coachingnc.com. Or you can call me at 919-924-0463. Matt, you wrote you actually have an ongoing piece that shows up on the Good Men Project and also on your blog site called The Open Letter to Blank Husbands. I can't say it on the air. And I'm curious, what's the reaction that you get from your readers when you're really calling, because you really blatantly call guys on the carpet for what you think they're not bringing to their marriages.
That's true.
What do people say to you in response?
Well, I get a few different responses. I would say there's four, two from each side. I mostly am 75% get a wife, usually, sometimes a girlfriend, that's like, wow, this. The most common email, I kid you not, is I just read all 12, now 13 of these, and I cried the whole way through because this is my life. And it's usually followed up with a couple questions like, how do I get my husband to read these without him getting defensive? Or how do I get my husband to have the aha moment you seem to have had before it's too late? And I will never have to worry about money again if I ever solve this problem.
Have you ever figured that one out?
Yeah.
What are some of the things the most common things that you think that guys are doing that are really sending them down the path of no return?
There's not enough hours in this conversation to cover it all because it's exactly what you said.
Okay, give me the top three.
It's not the cardinal sins. It's a series of the little things. I think it's the, all right, quickly. It's when you're sitting at the dinner table and your wife's telling, she's talking about her day. It might be something about she might just be telling a story about one of her friends, a story that a friend told her, or just something going on at work. And husband, long day at work, maybe is only half listening, or acting disinterested, or maybe he listens and he acts like it's stupid. He tries to maybe solve this problem. So she's something's going on at work, and she just wants to tell him about the day. And
right.
He wants
and,
to listen.
And he's a fixer. He's a fixer,
yeah,
so he wants to.
Absolutely.
He thinks she's asking for a solution when she's just sharing. Now we're back to the male-female differences and how they communicate.
Exactly. But I think it's huge. I think that I really do. And again, I know it's a bit of a stereotype and it's a bit of a generality, but I think the man who can learn to sit there and actively listen to his wife talk about something, no matter how disinterested he may be in the subject matter, and no matter how unimportant or silly he might secretly think it is, if he just loves and respects his wife enough to sit there and listen to it without trying to offer some man solution to her problem, I'm using quotes there, I just think that would go a long way. And that is really a metaphor for everything a man doesn't do. He might not want to go to the opera with her. He may not want to go take a walk with her after dinner. There's a million, he might not want to go to bed when she asks because he wants to watch Monday Night Football and monitor his fantasy football team. It's a million little things that if you just took one of them out of context, you'd say, wow, that's not a big deal. You know, guy had a long day. It's Monday Night Football. There's six other nights in the week. But when you add all of it up together, you have a wife that reads my post and cries about it and then leaves her husband. It's just what happens. And I think it's so sad. And I think most men, if they really truly, so we're going back to how people are accidentally ruining their marriages, I don't think most men, they're neglecting their wives for sure. But they're not waking up in the morning saying, man, what can I do to neglect my wife today? They are accidentally neglecting their wives, and there is a huge disconnect when she tries to tell him he's neglecting her. And if there was some magic pill we could give everybody so that when neglected wife tries to explain it to her husband, he doesn't get defensive and deny her those feelings, if we could just do that, you know, I think marriage divorce rate probably drops, 50-60% overnight? I mean,
well, it would. And you hit on something that I think is absolutely critical. And if people would take this away, I'm going to give this away for free. And I wish I could give it. Or I wish I could go into every household and give it to every couple, because there actually is. It's not quite a magic pill, but there actually is a way for a woman to bring that up to her husband. But here's the challenge. Most of the time, it doesn't get brought up until we're in the immediate feeling of being hurt. And it frequently comes out as either crying or anger, which guys don't know what to do with when a woman's doing either one of those things. Basically it just comes out at the wrong time and in the wrong way, and somebody feels attacked. And one of the things that I tell my clients, if you are going to broach a hard subject with somebody, specifically your spouse, but also it works with your kids, don't start the sentence with, why did you did, don't use the word you in the first three words of a sentence unless it's I love you, you're wonderful, and I'm glad you're in my life. Because once that word you comes out, it's really hard for somebody not to be defensive. And I know it's really – and my clients will tell me that's the one piece of advice I give them that is the hardest thing for them to do. So I'm not saying it's easy, but that is the answer to how do I get my partner to listen.
I hope people will listen to that advice, because I think most of it is truly just that, just the inability of all parties to hear one another, truly hear on a fundamental like level where they're understanding what the other is saying. Because so many decent people get divorced every day, and that I don't think – that I don't think would if they understood what you understand.
Well, and I know that this is what you're trying to do with a lot of because you actually talk about, and you said it earlier in the program, that people just aren't talking about marriage. So how do we get people to, you know, I talk about it. If you go to Huffington Post, you have, you know, Huffington Post, you know, love. You know, there's always, you know, how to find your partner, you know, dating, relate, you know. Huffington Post dating, then there's Huffington Post wedding, and then there's Huffington Post divorce. And I'm going, well, wait a minute, where's the piece on how to have a good marriage?
Right.
It's not there. So how do we, I mean, you learned this the hard way, and I know a lot of people are learning it the hard way, because most divorces aren't, like we said at the beginning, aren't the big reasons, or the loud reasons. And a lot of times I talk with people about affairs, that a lot of times affairs happen because the little things aren't being dealt with.
I couldn't agree more. That's another thing is a lot of people blame infidelity for their divorce. But the truth is, it's all these teeny little fractures we've already discussed. You know, the affair doesn't even come close to happening if those little fractures are addressed when they first start coming up, instead of becoming, you know, the Grand Canyon of marriage problems.
So what do you think would help couples do this better? I mean, obviously, if they read your stuff, if they read my stuff, but really, what can we do? Because people are still getting married. Now, I realize that the millennials are kind of like going, I'm not sure I want to do this. The track record's not so great. But, you know, they're still having kids. They're still doing everything, you know, buying houses together, whatever. It's like, okay, they're still going to run into the same thing because it isn't the marriage itself. I mean, it's not the marriage certificate. That doesn't really cause the problem.
Exactly right. That's what really frustrates me. And if I may, here's my little spiel on marriage and why I think it needs to be part of the great conversation. So, first of all, more than 9 out of 10 people statistically get in a long-term relationship and probably even married are the numbers that I've seen. It's, if you break it all down, it's actually 95% are people that plan to marry, are married, or were once married. You add all that up, it's 95% of the U.S. adult population. That's just 95 is a lot. I mean, there's almost nothing that encompasses 95% of people. When I say nothing, I mean the subject. Like, so just think about anything that people have, like, a cause about. You know, there's so many causes in our country, and everybody cares, and it's great. And I'm not suggesting people shouldn't be passionate about childhood obesity or, you know, getting your pet spayed and neutered or whatever anybody cares about. But marriage is affecting more than 9 out of 10 out of everybody, and we are demonstrably ill-prepared for this to happen. I just can't think of anything that two sane, decent human beings enter into voluntarily, and they know the score. You know, these people don't get married and think, man, divorce is going to be a piece of cake. If it ever happens, no big deal. You know, no problem. I'm not worried about it. But everybody knows divorce is horrible. It's like a well-known thing that it's bad.
Despite the numbers of people that try to downplay it, despite the numbers of people who try to go, oh, yeah, it's not that big of a deal. Anybody who's ever gone through a divorce, either as a partner or as the child, and even friends of people who get divorced get hurt by it. Because now I got to pick a new friend, and I can't be friends with you. I mean, it affects everybody.
It's intense how many people are affected, and you really feel it when you're in it. There was a couple psychologists, I think in the 70s, they came up with something called the Holmes and Ross Stress Scale, and they rank like all life traumas in terms of the most stressful thing. And death of your spouse was number one, and divorce was number two, and marital separation was number three, ahead of the death of a child, which is about the most terrifying thing I can imagine. So the fact that they consider marriage, just from a mental and physical stress standpoint, more impactful than something that bad, I think really lends credence to how big of a deal divorce is. I think anybody who really cares about their marriage and then goes through divorce and feels just that internal turmoil. And for me, that was the first time in my life I'd ever felt anything quite that horrible. I'd lived a relatively semi-charmed existence until then. And then I felt what real ugliness can feel like. And it's horrible, and that's really what prompted me to want to do this. So, okay, so everybody is going to get married, 9 out of 10. Or at the very least, enter a long-term relationship in which all the dynamics are the same. And more than half statistically, or at least half, and you may have better numbers than I do, but right, roughly it's a coin toss, are going to end in broken misery. And a lot of times there's a bunch of little kids involved and a bunch of money that changes hands and just a bunch of just sad brokenness. And even though that's true, even though like two really nice, kind adults that were thoughtful and they did this on purpose, and even though it's breaking statistically half or more of the time, nobody, it seems like, is saying, hey, wait a minute, here's this major societal problem we should deal with. So I don't understand the disconnect there. I'm not sure why we spend so much time on all of these issues we discuss publicly. All the things that make headlines and all the things we talk about during election season, all these just life issues that affect humanity. I don't see anything affecting people more than this topic, and more profoundly anyway, and it's just not being dealt with on any sort of macro level, and I'm really confused about it. I think this should be part of our cultural education system. I have no idea how that should be implemented, none. I'm no expert on uneducating people, but the fact that this is not a conversation we have. We teach everybody the War of 1812, but we don't teach them how to have... healthy,
but not the war that's going on in our own homes, yeah. Or how to avoid the war in our own homes.
I don't know how people justify it. I don't know how people wake up every day. And all of the people, how many people at the Department of Education have been divorced? Half, right? So it's like, why don't you care about this? Why isn't this something that we're talking about? I don't understand. But to me, that is the answer. To me, the long-term answer is getting everybody to where we now are with our understanding of how tobacco causes cancer. When you smoke it and it causes, when I was a kid, I was born in 1979. When I was a kid, you could smoke on airplanes still. There was, ashtrays on desks and college.
Oh, I know. Ugh.
You could just smoke anywhere, even in California. It was great. And now everybody is like totally fine with the idea that we're not really going to smoke anywhere. And I think even most smokers don't even smoke in their own house anymore. And I think most kids aren't going to grow up and smoke cigarettes. I think that is something that's just generally true.
Right.
Hopefully.
But they're going to, but they're probably going to grow up and get married. So yeah. I'm with you.
But
I'm with you trying to figure out how do we get them to this. So where can they find your viewpoint on this? Where can they find the letter to husbands and you actually, all your great writing on this subject? Because I think you've got a lot of interesting things to say.
I appreciate that. My blog is called Must Be This Tall to Ride, and it's simply mustbethistalltoride.com, and that's where my blog lives. And I am turning that series, that An Open Letter to Bad Word Husbands, that book is in progress. It's actually relatively close.
Good.
My lack of understanding about the publishing industry and not having any experience is frankly the big hang-up. But hopefully in the next 12 to 18 months, that thing is out. And I've had a lot of wonderful feedback about it. I've had a lot of people say, this is a really relatable way to explain all of these things that we're all dealing with. I really try to approach it just, hey, I'm a 30-something guy who accidentally broke his marriage, and I think I get it, and I think most of you are doing this too. So here, I'm going to tell you how I did it and what I think is happening. And for the handful of you out there that this applies to, and it turns out it's a lot, it helps. Like, it helps certain people. Somebody who might not read Dr. Gottman or Dr. Gray or anyone else, they might read just some dude, just some guy. Bad word.
Somebody who's walked the walk. Yeah. Let me know if you want the woman's. If you want the. I'll be happy to write the letter to the. wife, for you. But what I need people to understand is that change is hard. None of us like it. Most of us would like to be able to reach our goals by staying in our comfort zone, but to be honest, if your marriage isn't what you want it to be, doing the same thing or worse, doing nothing is not going to make it better. So please, 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 Matt's going to join me on this. Stop ignoring it. Stop talking about it. Stop waiting for time to make it better. Take action and do something about it now. You may not realize the price of your inaction until it's way too late. So keep listening for more ways to make your marriage great. And until next week, stay loving.